Credit markets don't usually grab headlines. Instead, they quietly shape how investors earn income, manage risk, and diversify portfolios. And as we enter 2026, the backdrop for this is an interesting one.
Welcome to a new episode of the Robeco Podcast.
While yields are still attractive, spreads are tight, and uncertainty from geopolitics to policy is very much part of this investing landscape. What does all of this mean for credit investors today? Where are the opportunities, and how should portfolios be positioned in this environment? Well, I'm joined by Evert Giessen and Jan-Willem Knol, portfolio managers of the Robeco Credit Income Strategy. And together, they invest across global credit markets with a focus on quality, diversification, and income. Evert and Jan-Willem, welcome. Great to have you here in our studio.
Nice to be here.
Thanks, Erica.
So now as we start 2026, you've heard my brief assessment. So how do you describe the current environment for investors? You know, are you nervous? Are you excited? And what feels different today compared with a year ago?
I think markets and investors have got used to, say, some volatility from the policy front. So last year we've seen quite a lot of initiatives from different politicians, which from time to time shook markets. Mm-hmm. The markets have become quite used to that. If you look at the macro front, then things are pretty okay at the moment for credit markets. So we're looking at an environment with global growth, which will probably be around trend growth for the global economy. Inflation, in some markets, it's still a little bit over central bank targets, but inflation is coming down. So that's also giving central banks some headroom to cut rates. So at least for the short to intermediate term, it's a pretty okay environment for credit markets. Mm.
And if I may add to that, financial conditions are pretty easy. The ECB has been lowering rates last year quite a lot. The Fed has lowered rates three times at the second half in the second half of last year. So if you look at financing conditions, they have been eased quite a lot over the last, 12, 18 months. Mm-hmm. So that will also help markets in general.
Yeah. So you sound relaxed. Your body language certainly is relaxed. Now, you often frame your investment approach using a framework of valuations, fundamentals, and technicals. If we look at valuations, with credit spreads pretty tight right now, do you think parts of the credit market are becoming complacent?
You could say that markets at some point are perhaps complacent for some risks, but the thing is, we will only know that in hindsight if the risks have materialized. Also, a big probability that the risks will not materialize. Mm-hmm. If you look at overall valuations on index or market level, then we are at tight levels. So in our perspective, there's not a lot of potential for additional spread tightening. But on the other hand, the risk that we will see wider spreads is also relatively limited, given the solid fundamental environment that we are in. Mm-hmm. That means that we expect 2026 to be an environment where returns will be driven by carry, simply the spread income that you will generate in your portfolio. Mm-hmm. And if you look at different parts of the market, then there are still parts in the high yield market, the better quality part of the high yield market, and also in emerging markets where you still can earn pretty attractive carry in your portfolio.
Okay, so Everett, the point you're making, what I'm hearing, is if you look at the market overall, that's what the metrics are telling you, tight spreads, but it's really about looking a little closer and looking, finding those opportunities.
Exactly,
Jan-Willem, perhaps to ask you on the fundamentals, because this is clearly also important, corporate balance sheets, quality of earnings, are you finding some gems still?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe we cannot stress that enough. Macro fundamentals are really strong, right? And also most corporate sectors and the financial sector in particular, bottom-up, they look very strong. So for us, this is a very nice environment to look for interesting, alpha opportunities, because they're out there, right?
Yes.
There's still rising stars. There are certain sectors which are in less good shape, chemical sector, for example, but even there, we see at more stressed valuations, we see interesting opportunities. But also in sectors, you know, financials is a very important sector for us at the moment, a sector where we've seen a lot of rising stars, especially in the European banking space, but also in emerging markets. Balance sheets are strong, credit quality is extremely strong, backed by a strong macro environment. So we see lots of opportunities basically across the globe.
To ask you the flip side, in which sectors or regions are you seeing some early signs of stress or distress, if at all?
Yeah, there are segments we are more cautious on that has to do with chemicals, some structural trends without going into detail that has to do with China. There's lots of competition, price competition. There's the sector which added too much capacity over recent years. So that's very sector specific, I would say. Private credit, but now we're talking about risks, but private credit is an area we watch closely. We're not overly worried, but we do expect more idiosyncratic risk there. Okay. On the other hand, BDCs, that's a specific segment within the private credit space, is a subsegment which has been very volatile. But also there you have good and bad companies. So even there we might in 26 see caused by volatility more interesting opportunities. Currently we don't invest in those, but those might be interesting opportunities for us going forward.
Just the acronym, if you can explain that.
Yeah, business development companies. So they're basically mostly based in the U.S. and they lend to small and mid-cap enterprises in the U.S. They decided to do that. And they have been very volatile. Last year, there have been lots of market concerns around those companies. We have avoided them until now, but that might be an interesting segment going forward.
Okay. Now, just picking up of some of what you've said, speaking by, you know, by region, U.S., emerging markets, etc., your positioning by region, Everett, is that regional exposure ultimately because of bottom-up selection, or do you have an upfront allocation by region?
Yeah, we don't have upfront top-down regional allocation. We have a top-down framework for overall markets, and that more or less points us to where the potential bottom-up opportunities are. So if our top-down framework indicates that emerging markets are relatively attractive from a global perspective, and then we will start looking for bottom-up opportunities in emerging markets. In the end, everything we invest in is a bottom-up decision, because in credit, you want to do your homework. Avoiding losers is very important in investing in credit.
I understand that's your one's motto for life if you are a credit portfolio manager.
You have to realize that upside in credit markets is relatively limited. So you get your coupons and perhaps some spread tightening. Mm. But if you are wrong in an investment case, you can lose your investment. Yes. So that can have a big impact on your portfolio. So avoiding losers in your portfolio already will generate a lot of additional return for clients.
Right. Jan-Willem, looking now at the emerging market region, as you've now mentioned, but we know on the equity side, emerging market equities had a stellar year, really finally outperforming. Was there similar momentum in emerging market credits?
Not so much as we've seen on the equity side, but fundamentals in sovereign fundamentals to start with broadly in emerging markets are strong. For us, the more interesting areas have been the EMEA region, so Eastern Europe, Africa to a certain extent, and also Latin America. So we have owned companies like banks, telco companies, tower companies. So we have seen opportunities. Asia is an interesting area, although there we found valuations more stretched, especially on the IG side. And China, of course, is a special case where we've been more cautious. Lots of opportunities. You know, we run a benchmark unconstrained strategy. We can invest across sectors, industries, rating classes, and countries. So it's
One of the nice things we also played in emerging markets is in the commodity space. So mining companies. Towards, say, mid-2025, we became a little bit more constructive on global growth prospects for the global economy. And that's an environment where also commodities will do relatively well. So we added exposure to a number of mining companies in the emerging market space. And there we have also have seen that spreads have tightened by quite a bit.
So you've really seen a payoff from that?
Yeah, look, for example, at the copper price that is reaching record levels, and mining companies active in the copper industry are benefiting from that. Mm.
The other aspect really that was noticeable last year, continuing the previous year's theme, was the AI story. And that's dominating the investment conversation. Is this mostly an equity story too? Are you also seeing opportunities for yourselves?
Let me start. I don't want to sound like a grumpy credit investor, but...
That we would never call you that.
No. But in credit, it's about protecting your investment and a little bit excess return. If you look at AI, then that are big growth stories. Right. So as an equity holder, you will benefit tremendously if you invest in the right opportunities. As a bond investor, you could invest in a similar in the same company, but what you will get is your coupon, not the big upside.
Right.
If you look at, say, 10, 15 AI companies, then perhaps one, two of those will be the big winners. The others will simply disappear. So for a credit investor, those are not really the type of investments that you want to invest in. You don't want to invest in the big, high potential upside, but also a pretty high likelihood that there will be a big downside. Hmm. So AI is not a theme that we play very actively in our portfolios.
Well, you're going somewhere with that, but I just wanted to interrupt this point. If we're seeing all these announcements by these tech AI companies on CapEx expansions, a lot of it's going to have to be debt funded. So are you saying you're not necessarily going to look there?
Only when the relative value is there. So you see some of the big tech companies issuing debt for AI investments at, say, 40, 50 basis point spreads. That's simply not attractive enough for the credit income strategy. Mm. If a name sells off at a certain point of time and spreads are approaching, say, the 150-200 level, and the underlying business is solid, then it becomes an interesting basis investment case.
Yes.
So, and there also our more or less contrarian approach steps in.
Right.
If markets start to worry about things, then we think things start to become interesting, start doing our homework, and then we could invest in those cases.
Right. So Jan Willem, I think Evert was going somewhere with that story, but I would imagine around the AI theme, there's so many other related sectors and components that might come up as opportunities that do appeal to your more pedestrian approach to investing.
Pedestrian approach. AI has a big impact, of course, on the economy, first of all. So there's a lot of CapEx relating to AI, so at the moment it benefits U.S. growth a lot. It will have an impact on sectors, positive, negative. It will help productivity in certain sectors. Even European banks, by the way, are named as an AI beneficiary, because you see there's still a lot of human task, a repetitive task, which could be taken out by more AI programs. So partly the investment case for European banks, but it's more equity driven, but also helps credit investors, is just lower costs as well. So rising profitability, not only on your revenue side, but also caused by lower cost. So the winners and losers, software is an area where we would be more cautious. And data centers and other, let's say, AI CapEx related companies, they will issue probably a lot of bonds next year that might reprice the whole market negatively, so wider spread. So as David mentioned, those might be opportunities for us to look at. Mm-hmm. So there will be a lot of volatility and excitement, I think, following this whole AI theme for us, and it might be more indirect than direct, but lots to do for us, I think.
In summary, what would you say are the top three sectors that are well represented or an overweight representation in your portfolio?
Banks, first of all, that is by far the largest sector, and that is because currently we see very strong fundamentals, as mentioned there. I myself have a background in the financial space, but I've never seen the banking sector in such a good shape, as especially the European banking sector, as we see today. And that is from every angle you could look at it, be it credit quality, capital, liquidity, funding, profitability. Even for next year, we see rising profitability for European banks, driven by steeper yield curves, cost control and very low credit cost. So that looks very solid. And actually, on sticking to the financial theme, actually also insurance is still a pretty large sector for us. And also there, but that's a bit of a more longer-term theme, but there solvency regulations have changed over the years. With a regime, especially in Europe again, with a regime called Solvency II, that has, in our view, made insurance companies just help them become better risk managers. So balance sheets, but also profitability looks much better than it used to be, let's say, 20 years ago when I started looking at financials.
Evert, one more sector.
Yeah, sectors like telco and utilities are also attractive. Yes. So what we see there a lot is issuance of so-called hybrid bonds that are subordinated bonds, often issued by investment-grade companies. And you get quite an attractive spread premium versus normal bonds for those type of companies. So over the past 1-2 years, we have seen quite some issuance in the telco space and utility space. And actually, we also expect that in the utility sector, because of all the AI investments, utilities need to invest more in electricity generation. So we expect more issuance in that part of the market. So there could be very nice hybrid opportunities in the utility sector going forward. And basic industries. So we talked a bit about mining. That's part of basic materials, so that's one of the names that we still like. And chemicals, so we've been very cautious on that sector. But things are starting to turn in that part of the market. Not as a lot of visibility yet on margin improvement, but we see here and there that companies start to take out some capacity. So it's time to start looking at that sector.
Mm. Then perhaps asking you the other end of the spectrum question, what are you avoiding or what's suggesting too much risk compared with what investors are earning? Jan Willem?
Yeah, currently, if I start again with financials, that is currently still private credit. So we are cautious with, for example, insurance companies which have a large exposure to private credit. And again, we don't see private credit as a systemic risk, but we do expect idiosyncratic risks. So that's where we look very carefully. Other sectors we're cautious with is, as I mentioned, chemicals, although we also see specific bottom-up opportunities in that sector. Valuations are tight, as Evert mentioned, so we're a bit more cautious with longer duration bonds. So if spreads widen, then the price volatility of long duration bonds is higher. So in this instance, that would be then a negative price movement. So we're looking more for names with a decent spread, bit lower in the quality spectrum, but still high quality according to our definition. So high quality for us would be, let's say, what we could typically call the 5Bs, BBB, BB rated companies, which are still very high quality, but also offer decent spread. So we're looking, for example, in the BB space for shorter maturity, but then more spready names. So names which generate a decent income with low price volatility.
Got it. Evert, perhaps a more philosophical question from an investor perspective. What we've seen over the past year with really US policy becoming much more adventurous and unpredictable, it's changing the rules of investing, so it seems to me, looking at it from the outside. Is that how you've experienced it? Have you had to adapt and adjust your approach to things?
No, our approach has always been contrarian. And actually, that approach worked pretty well in 2025. So what we saw in April when, say, all the tariffs were announced, we saw a huge spread widening. And, our view was, in the end, this will not work. So we used that opportunity to start adding exposure or credit risk to the portfolio. So an environment where there is volatility, that can either be from something like COVID or a political regime where it's a little bit less unpredictable. Yeah, that's an environment where a contrarian investment strategy actually works very nice.
It's not always, those opportunities are not always there, but that is a very natural way to look at markets.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes consensus is also right.
And then on a personal note, we always tease you as credit investors, and apologies because I teased you today, but what still gives you a kick as a credit investor, Evert?
Oh, I was hoping that John Willem would get
bypass you.
No, yeah. What's very nice about this strategy is that we can invest globally in all kinds of markets. So there's a lot of opportunity. And what is nice is to have the right bets in your portfolio. So actually make additional performance for the strategy.
Yeah.
And that is, at least that gives me a lot of energy.
Yes. Jan Willem, interesting in your career how you've shifted. You were an analyst for a very long time, a senior analyst, moving across to a portfolio manager position. How have you experienced that? And indeed, what gives you a kick now?
Yeah, sure. I also moved from equity to credit.
Ah,
so
yes.
Yeah, I've done several things. Yeah, what gives me a kick, as Evert said, I mean, I love looking at markets. I love looking at also bottom-up analyzing companies. And the fun there is, apart from following, you know, themes which are very interesting, I guess, also to non-investors, it's also to implement bets and to have a view, and especially, of course, when that view turns out to be the right view, and especially when it has been a contrarian view, that is just very nice, and that gives a lot of energy.
Mm.
So, the drive to perform, to generate alpha, it has always been there, and I think that's also why I enjoy also doing this strategy with Evert, because he has exactly the same
yes.
drive.
Jan Willem, Evert, I've loved talking to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you to listeners. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and share the podcast link within your network. Stay tuned for more investment perspectives in our next episode. This podcast is available on all major podcast platforms and on the Robeco website. Until next time.